first argued case this morning is number 21-1992, Universal Electronics Incorporated against Roku Incorporated. Mr. Nicodema.
Good morning, Your Honors. Please, the Court. The first issue I'd like to address is the board's finding that there was a motivation to combine Misha, Rai, and Karras references with the carrier signal modulation of Dubil or Skerlos. In making that finding, the board committed reversible error. It was not based on substantial evidence. Now, if the court agrees with me, this finding applies to all the challenge patents, all the grounds of unpatentability, and all the challenge claims. So if there was not a sufficient motivation to combine the references, the board's unpatentability judgment should be reversed. Now, the board was obligated to articulate an affirmative reason why a person of ordinary skill would combine references. It's not enough to show that references could be combined, and it's not enough to say that something was known in the art, because something being known in the art is a matter of disclosure, and motivation to combine is a separate...
Dr. Russ's declaration and the expert testimony. And as I understand it, those primary references suggest, using IR, and then the secondary references teach pulse width modulation in which to do that. Why wasn't the board's finding that modification of the first reference in light of the second reference in order to have the implementation details for the pulse width modulation, why isn't that a sufficient reason for modification?
Because all Dr. Russ did was say that carrier signal modulation was known out of the many other wireless transmission techniques.
He didn't refer to the secondary references at all in saying that?
Well, what he said was, I can read you, this is at appendix page A1057. It's his paragraph 82. Now, the board relied on paragraphs 82 to 93 of Dr. Russ's declaration finding motivation to combine. The full appendix page span for that is 1057 through 1062. All he does in those paragraphs is cite references to show why carrier signal modulation was known. And I think if we look in paragraph 82, Your Honor, his introduction to his discussion of those references tells it all. This is what he says, quote, a POSA would have known to transmit key codes by modulating the key codes onto carrier signals, period. For example, it was well known to utilize modulation techniques to wirelessly transmit key codes. So all he's saying there, to my reading, is that carrier signal modulation was known. Now, Dr. Russ admits, as did the board, that UEI's expert, Dr. Sprengler, in his declaration, gave an opinion that there were several options for transmitting an IR or RF signal in the art at the time. He specifies what the other options are.
What about, I see what you're pointing to there, but what about like page A1083? I mean, you're looking under a section that's got the heading transmitting key codes via modulating key codes onto carrier signals is well known. And that's true. That is what the following multiple paragraphs support. But what about, there's, for example, paragraph 125, 126, where it talks about how what Mishra teaches and how a POSA would have understood the wireless transmission would have been, it doesn't explicitly describe the modulation. And then, as previously explained, if a POSA did not know the operational details, a POSA would look to other references, such as Dubil, describing protocols for performing this transmission.
Sure,
why
and
isn't
I don't
that sufficient?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I don't think he's saying anything different there than he's saying in paragraph 82, that he looked to that reference, like Dubil, because carrier signal modulation was known. I think what he's doing is he's looking at the claim element, and he's engaging in a hindsight reconstruction. Now, we have to look at what the board relied on. They relied on paragraphs 82 to 93 of Dr. Russ's declaration to come to their conclusion. And in those paragraphs, all he talks about is that carrier signal modulation was known. Now, there's no dispute there.
Why isn't that enough, that it's known in the art? Why wouldn't a postal look at at modulation and find that it was well known in the analogous art, and to better understand how to have a combination with respect to modulation.
Sure, Your Honor. Now, most patents, if not all patent claims, are based on a combination of things that are known. And if you look at the cases we cited, for example, the NuVasive case, disclosure in the art, what is known, is different than is there a motivation to combine. Because whether the skilled artisan is relying on personal knowledge of something to be known or a secondary reference of something to be known, there still has to be the motivation to put the two together. It's not enough to say, well, this is known, it's obvious.
What about the motivation is to implement the modulation technique? For example, again, looking at page A1085, Dr. Russ's declaration at paragraph 128 talks about how it would have been predictable and desirable to implement the well-known modulation techniques described in DeBille to transmit the control code in the primary reference. Why isn't that enough? I mean, the primary references say, I want to use IR, but they don't give the implementation details. Multiple secondary references give the implementation details of exactly how to do that modulation. And so therefore showing that which the first reference hints at is actually well known and easily modulated, why isn't that a good reason to combine?
Because what he's doing in that analysis, Your Honor, is looking at the claim element and then saying, okay, I need modulation, now let me find a reference that discloses modulation.
That's a factual question, right? You're arguing hindsight, which is a factual question.
I'm arguing that his motivation to combine is legally insufficient because all he did was say, if something is known, I can choose it, even though there were many other alternatives. Now, if you look at the declaration of Dr. Sprengler, he says that Dr. Russ did not conduct an analysis of whether to use modulation in the first place.
How many modulation techniques were known? How many ways to send the IR? Are you making an argument that there's so many different ways that a person of ordinary skill in the art wouldn't have been motivated to pick this particular one?
Well, I'm relying on paragraphs 144 to 149 of Dr. Sprengler's declaration, where he says there are several different techniques, and the board recognizes. He specifies what the other options are. He describes various trade-offs that a person of ordinary skill might consider in selecting among those various options.
The problem I'm having with your argument is that this is a substantial evidence question. And the question is whether the board's analysis was reasonable, whether its fact-finding was reasonable. And I understand you're pointing to alternative expert testimony presented by your client, but why can't the board rely on the expert testimony provided by Roku?
Sure. I'm saying, Your Honor, it was an error of law for the board to do that because all Dr. Russ did is say carrier signal modulation was known. And I think it's significant to look at why the board...
Counselor, what is that error? Help me with understanding this part of your argument. Are you saying that it's not enough that something be known in the prior art, that there has to be more, that you have to also show, for example... through evidence that the prior art is analogous?
No, I think you have to show an affirmative motivation why, out of several alternatives that are known, the skilled artisan chose one of them. Now, I think it's important to look at how the board tried to discount Dr. Sprengler's testimony. And I think the board made an error of law there, too. They cited this case in Ray Moet, this court's case from 2012, knowing that Dr. Sprengler said there are many different alternatives and there are trade-offs, etc. So the board cites In Re Moet for the proposition that the availability of better alternatives in the prior art does not mean that an inferior combination is inapt for obviousness purposes. But if you look at the case, it's a teaching away case. This is not a teaching away situation. The question here is whether Dr. Russ and the board conducted a proper motivation to combine analysis by relying on the fact that carrier signal modulation was known while failing to explain why a person of ordinary skill would have chosen that over all the other known methods.
What does your patent specification say about carrier signal modulation?
The inventor said that carrier signal modulation is a known technique.
Okay. So,
there are many other known techniques for wireless transmission.
Does it say why it's so valuable or why that's important? I mean, is there anything in your specification that explains? Is that like an important aspect of the invention?
It's part of the claim, so all the claim elements are important. I don't think it says one way or the other, Judge.
You're saying that the specification, as I understand it, when I read the specification, it says it's well known. It also doesn't seem to suggest that it was really important to pick that particular modulation technique, but maybe I missed it.
Yeah, I don't think it says one way or the other.
Okay.
I'm looking at my clock. If your honors don't have any other questions on this matter, I'd like to address one other issue. That is the board's claim construction of the generating step. That involves grounds 1 and 2 in claims 1 to 4, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 2 to 25 of the 642 patent, and ground 1 in claims 2 to 3 of the 389 patent. So the full claim element reads generating a key code within a key code generator device using the keystroke indicator signal. Now, the board construed that term to mean that the key code can be generated by merely translating it or converting the code into another format, and that generating just doesn't mean identifying a key code.
Did you raise this argument before the board?
Yes, if you look at appendix pages 24 to 27, the board went into a detailed analysis of the ordinary meaning of the term generating based on the specification in terms of the generating step.
Let me have a citation to where you...
Appendix page 24 to 27.
I also wanted to ask you a question about this issue. I'm trying to understand why the claim construction matters. And the reason why is because I see two places where the board says, for example, at page A56 to 57, they say that we agree with the petitioner that RAI does not simply convert the format of the signal, but instead performs an active selection of a key code and wirelessly transmits this key code using IR emitter 48. And then similarly, when talking about Mishra, they say it's not just, it actually transmits a key code so that the master set-top box can identify the corresponding key code.
Yes.
A38. So I'm wondering, it seemed to me that the board was saying, hey, the prior art teaches the claims as you construe them anyway. And so I'm wondering why we should be second-guessing the board's construction when it seems to be addressing your claim construction.
Well, I think what the board actually found, Your Honor, is that Mishra and Rai disclosed merely translating or converting a received key code into another format and not simply identifying. There wouldn't have been that fight between the parties if they disclosed anything else. And the appendix pages I can cite for you are appendix page 29, 31, 39, 54 to 55, and 122.
Can you address my concern about pages 56
sure.
to 57?
Sure.
It's the paragraph that starts on page 56 and goes down to 57 and talking specifically about RAI and saying, we agree with the petitioner that RAI doesn't simply convert the format. I think you're arguing that the board erred by interpreting the claim to simply require and convert the format.
So if we look at 54 and 55, petitioner argues that RAI does not explicitly describe the back-end operational details between the wireless transmission of key codes. And it says RAI teaches the wireless transmission of control codes, key codes, to an electronic consumer device by the transceiver using an IR emitter. A person with ordinary skill in the art looking to understand these operational details would have known to look to references such as Dubil. So again, there's a combination going on here, because the board, if I'm looking at these other pages, such as appendix page 29,
31. Do you not?
Yeah, I don't
read,
think I don't.
Do you not read the paragraph that starts on page 856 and goes to 857 the same way I do?
I don't believe that paragraph says that that these references, degenerating means identifying. I believe that if you read the board's opinion in its entirety, including the pages I cited, the board was saying Mishra and Rai disclose merely translating or converting.
Just so you know, I did read it in its entirety.
Oh, I'm sure you did, Your Honor, and I didn't mean to suggest otherwise.
These two sections that I was referring to just really gave me pause. I was trying to understand. Thank you.
And I see I have 30 seconds. Well, now it's counting up. Okay.
Well, we will save your rebuttal time. Do you need a last word at the moment, or shall we hear from the other side?
I'll save this for my rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it.
Mr. Wright.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. I'll begin, as counsel did, with the modulation limitation. Carrier signal modulation was a conventional and routine and well-known way to transmit information via RF and via IR well before the time of invention. And
that may be the case, but isn't the board required to provide a reason under KSR for motivation to combine?
Well, the board's required to articulate a motivation, but the motivation under KSR doesn't have to be kind of expressly in the references. And what Dr. Russ testified to and what the board relied on...
But wouldn't you agree that in this case, it's kind of left up to the court to kind of put things together, to connect the dots?
I think Dr. Russ connected the dots, and the board relied on Dr. Russ's testimony. So if you look at Appendix 45, for example, there the board is talking about in the middle paragraph, and in the middle of the middle paragraph, although Mishra may not be explicit in suggesting carrier signal modulation, Dr. Russ provides sufficient basis in light of the well-known practice of using carrier signal modulation for RF and IR transmission that a person of skill in the art would have understood such a suggestion from Mishra's disclosure of such a transmission technique. And if we turn to Dr. Russ's testimony, which is...
Well, I guess what you just read deepens the mystery for me. You say that although Mishra may not be explicit in suggesting, I mean, doesn't KSR require at least some degree of explicitness in order to fully understand what the motivation is?
Yes, and Mishra does suggest that to the skilled artisan. So Dr. Russ explained in his declaration, this was paragraphs... Well, it's at Appendix 1057 all the way through 1062. He relies on no less than, you know, five other prior art references to show that these carrier signal modulation was well known for RF and IR transmission.
So Mishra is the primary reference?
Yes.
And then, so Mishra doesn't explain, it doesn't say expressly that it would use carrier signal modulation, but these five secondary references explain the use of carrier signal modulation. Are they in remote control embodiments or other embodiments?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
At paragraph 126, Judge Stoll, which you pointed to, where Dr. Russ is actually talking about the application of Mishra to the modulation step, and this is at Appendix 1083, Dr. Russ says that while the skilled artisan would have understood that the wireless transmission of a control code using radio frequency or an infrared frequency would have been performed via the modulation of the control code onto a carrier signal, Mishra doesn't explicitly describe the modulation. But because Mishra describes transmission via IR and transmission via RF, the skilled artisan reading that would know that at the time of the invention that was conventionally done.
That's your argument. The board doesn't say that.
Oh, the board, I think the board does say that at Appendix 45. in almost the same words as Dr. Russ. Although Mishra may not be explicit in suggesting carrier signal modulation, Dr. Russ provides sufficient basis. In light of the well-known practice of using carrier signal modulation for RF and IR transmission, that a person of skill in the art would have understood such a suggestion from Mishra's disclosure. And that's what Dr. Russ said, that given that there's wireless transmission using radio frequency and infrared, that modulation would have been what the skilled artisan would have used. Now, a lot of this, of their argument, hinges on their allegation that Dr. Sprenger testified that, oh, there were many other ways to transmit information over IR and RF besides modulation. But when you peek under the hood, you can look high and low through UEI's briefing. They don't call out any of those alternate ways to transmit information via IR, wirelessly, via IR and RF.
Did he say many different? What exactly did he say?
Right, so Dr. Springer's declaration, you can see at appendix 2869, and it's paragraphs 145 and 146. And when you read it carefully, in paragraph 145, Dr. Sprenger claims that modulation onto a carrier signal is only one of several options for transmitting a signal. And let me be clear that modulation onto a carrier signal, that is what modulation is. It's changing a carrier signal so that you can send information.
So far, all you've shown is that this was known in the art. You haven't yet, I think, pointed to a reason for the motivation to combine. There's got to be a reason.
Right, and the reason is that when you use, and when the prior art references call out IR transmission and carrier signal, sorry, IR transmission and RF transmission, those two forms of wireless transmission, what Dr. Russ explained in detail is that the skilled artisan would have recognized that for that form of transmission, carrier signal modulation is the conventional and routine and thus obvious way of transmitting information. And the board relied on Dr. Russ's testimony to make that factual finding, and that's entitled to substantial deference. But when you look at what Dr. Sprenger is saying at if you go to paragraph 146, where he says, in fact, there are other approaches the skilled artisan could take advantage of to increase error resiliency. And then when he goes down and says there are a number of alternative approaches to using intermediate carrier frequency, he says, oh, well, there's such methods include different signal modulation. Well, that's still modulation. Line code and coding schemes. Well, those are ways of putting information onto a signal that then gets modulated. And then parity information and error checking or correcting or a combination thereof. Those are techniques that are used with modulation.
I would have thought,
yes,
that the issue to be developed was whether or not the technology existed to make this combination, not whether it would have been obvious to make the combination if the technology existed. But I didn't see that was discussed by the experts by either side. Is that actually a non-issue?
Well, I think Dr. Russ did both. He explained that for IR and RF transmission, that carrier signal modulation was the conventional and well-known way to go about transmitting information. And he testified that the skilled artisan, thus looking at Mishra and Rai, looking at the primary references, Mishra and Rai, that they both call out RF and IR transmission, and the skilled artisan would have recognized from that disclosure that the conventional and well-known way to go about carrying out that transmission of information is with carrier signal modulation. And when you peek under the hood, the only non-modulation technique that Dr. Springer actually suggested was somehow turning on and off an IR signal. That was it. So there, and the board never made a finding.
Okay, you're not answering my question.
Okay.
To get to the foundation of all of this, if it was so obvious to make this combination all these years, both wireless transmission and standard, all of the ins and outs are known, how come it wasn't done until these inventors did so?
Use of carrier signal modulation to transmit information via IR and RF was done. Many...
Yes, exactly. That's the problem. It was done. It was the combination that they tell us is what's special of the two forms of wireless transmission, IR and RF.
I don't think the particular combination of IR and RF is what's novel here. RF is the way that the... is one way that the remote control can communicate with the set-top box, and IR is a way that the remote control can communicate directly with the television, but that's not the point of novelty, the combination of IR and RF.
Counsel?
Yes.
Why is it that you think that your primary reference doesn't give the implementation detail that your secondary references provide?
Because it was so well known in the art.
That they just didn't give that detail?
And the patents at issue here don't give the detail either. In fact, they say expressly that different modulation techniques were well known in the art. This is absolutely not an invention about modulation at all. The patent repeatedly says that modulation techniques were well known in the art. I think the bottom line is that the board...
What's your legal authority for the position that you seem to be arguing, that all you have to say is that it was well known in the art and that you meet the requirements for motivation to combine under KSR?
Well, I don't think that's our position. What Dr. Russ testified, and this is, again, at paragraph 126 of appendix 1083, and this is what the board relied on to make its fact finding, is that the skilled artisan would have understood, reading Mishra, in view of Mishra's disclosure of RF and IR transmission, the skilled artisan would have understood that that would have been done via carrier signal modulation. And he provides ample background support for that earlier in the background section of his testimony. And the board expressly relied on that testimony. And that finding is entitled to deference.
What about, are you relying also on the finding that it would have been predictable and desirable to implement the well-known modulation techniques described in DeBille to transmit the code in the primary reference? It's. I'm looking at page 1085 where it talks about predictable and desirable and yielding predictable results. It's paragraph 128.
Right. So the other prong of obviousness is, you know, reasonable expectation of success and the predictability of the art. And again, this was all well known probably for decades prior to the invention. And again, the board relied heavily on Dr. Russ's testimony all the way through on this point.
I don't read this paragraph to only talking about reasonable results or expected success, because it does say motivation in this paragraph. I'm sure, am I misreading the paragraph? It says opposed it would have been motivated.
I'm sorry, where are you exactly?
I'm on page A1085,
yes.
On the middle of the page. It says, because DeBille discloses an organized framework, DeBille being the remote control secondary reference, because DeBille discloses an organized framework for transmitting, storing, and using remote control commands, APOSA would have been motivated to implement the teachings of DeBille and Mishra. Motivated. The teachings of DeBille with Mishra. See, in other words, I read that sentence, maybe I'm wrong, but it says because the secondary reference, Dubil, teaches one way, an organized framework for sending remote control commands, Opposer would have been motivated to implement that in Mishra, which teaches another remote control. Am I misreading that sentence?
I don't think you're misreading it, but again, this is not a patent on carrier signal modulation or modulation.
No, I'm just asking you, this is a separate statement in Dr. Russ's declaration supporting a motivation to combine. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think you're misreading it at all.
Okay.
So I'm getting short on my time. I'm happy to address any other issues, including the generating limitation.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's proceed, please.
Okay, so with respect to the generating limitation, I think, Judge Stoll, you're absolutely correct to peek under the hood and look at what's going on in Mishra and Rye. And the board showed that it peeked under the hood when it was looking at what is happening in Mishra and Rye. And what each of those references disclose is virtually indistinguishable from the embodiment that is described in the patents that are at issue here. So if we look at Mishra, for example, at paragraph 20, and this is at appendix 1188, what Mishra does use the word translate here. And at paragraph 20, Mishra says, having received a command signal, that is the keystroke indicator, from the remote control, System 12 can translate the command into a format appropriate for controlling a particular device 16. So what does Mishra mean when it uses the word translate here? In the middle of paragraph 20, in the sentence that starts with when the RCU transmits a signal corresponding to a well-known function, that's the keystroke indicator signal, and then this parenthetical is very important, which signal may not be particularly adapted to work with any particular device, System 12 can translate that signal and send the information back to the RCU, to the remote control, to enable the RCU to control the target appliance. So Mishra takes in a signal, the keystroke indicator, that is not formatted or appropriate for any particular device. Mishra reaches into its database, which is disclosed in paragraph 33. It's at the top of the first column of 1189. Mishra reaches into its database, identifies the appropriate key code for a particular device, and then takes that key code, modulates it onto a carrier signal in combination with Dubil and sends it back to the remote control. That is precisely what is happening in the challenged patents. So setting aside what translating means or converting means or identifying, these are all just semantic word games. When we peek under the hood, what Mishra does is exactly the same, and what Rye does is exactly the same as well. And the board understood that. And if we look at Appendix 37, for example, in the board's decision, the board says that Mishra, this is in the second full paragraph on Appendix 37, the board says Mishra recognizes that the command signal may not be particularly adapted, the command signal is the key code indicator signal, may not be particularly adapted to work any particular device. Thus, after a user presses channel up so that the remote control transmits the command to the master, the system can translate the command to a format appropriate for controlling a particular device. The board absolutely understood. And then when it comes to the generating limitation, so what I was reading from there on Appendix 37 was from the receiving limitation. But on Appendix 39, when the board is talking about the generating limitation, in the second paragraph, the board says, for the reasons discussed in connection with the receiving limitation, we disagree with the patent owner's arguments that translation was expressly disclaimed during prosecution and that there's no keystroke indicator disclosed by Mishra. And importantly, at Appendix 38, at the top and in the second paragraph, the board resolved the factual dispute about what Mishra teaches by in Roku's favor by relying on Dr. Russ's testimony in that regard. And then Judge Stoll, additionally, the board understood what was happening in Rye, as you mentioned, at Appendix 56 to 57, that Rye's conversion, although it uses the word convert, Rye's identifying a key code from a database that is specific to a bunch of different devices. And I can point you to where Rye discloses that database, but the board peeked under the hood, and the board was absolutely correct when it declined UEI's invitation to exclude the word translating or the word converting from the generating step. Even if we go with the narrowest interpretation of the generating step, which is taking the construction of the key code generator device and the structure of identifying a database and identifying a key code from that database, even under that narrowest construction of the generating step, when you peek under the hood, that is exactly what Mishra and Rye are doing.
Any more questions for Mr. Rye?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Judge. I think it's important to look at Dr. Russ's deposition testimony. Specifically, appendix page 34, 11, and 12, to dispel any suggestion that Mishra suggests carries signal modulation, because he was asked that very specific question. It's appendix page 3411. On 3411, beginning at line 19, here was the question posed to Dr. Russ. Would you agree that Mishra itself doesn't suggest any specific methods if it doesn't explicitly talk about how signals are transmitted at all? Answer, I think the way I would put it is that Mishra did not need to disclose it because modulation onto carrier frequencies for both IR and RF are well known in the art. So a person of ordinary skill reading Mishra would understand there are multiple possible ways to accomplish the aims of the Mishra disclosure. So he's conceding here that it does not disclose, does not suggest carrier signal modulation. And he's also saying there are multiple ways to accomplish the aims of wireless transmission, which is what Dr. Sprenger says. So when the board suggested that Mishra has some suggestion to carry signal modulation, look at what the board relied on, those same paragraphs 82 to 93 of Dr. Russ's declaration, and all those paragraphs say is that carrier signal modulation was known. So we come full circle.
Doesn't he say, though, there's multiple possible ways to accomplish the aims of the Mishra disclosure, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Now, Your Honor had pointed to a portion of Dr. Russ's declaration where he talks about predictability, desirability. I think we have to go back to what the board actually decided on appendix pages 44 to 45. The board didn't rely on those opinions. The board, at every turn, relied on paragraphs 82 to 93 of Dr. Russ's declaration, which just discussed the question of whether carrier signal modulation was known. Now, if we look at appendix page 1084.
How do you read this? It says, although Mishra is not explicit in suggesting carrier signal, Dr. Russ provides sufficient basis in light of well-known practice that a person of ordinary skill in the art would have understood such a suggestion from Mishra's disclosure.
And he cites to paragraphs 82 to 93.
I understand. But
how do I read what the board said?
Yeah.
I read what the board said is that if you're relying on paragraphs 82 to 93, carrier signal modulation was known. We keep coming full circle.
Okay.
Just a couple of points on the generating step. Counsel pointed to appendix pages 37, 38, and in the second to last full paragraph, says the system can translate the command into a format appropriate for controlling a particular device. And then on the very next page at the top, it says that is why only mere translation into an appropriate format such as RF and IR is needed. That's why it's our position that Mishra discloses translating, but not identifying. And I just wanted to make two quick points on the claim construction issue. We briefed this extensively. The term key code generator device is part of the generating step, and it was construed as a means plus function claim. The function is to generate a key code, which is the beginning language of the generating step, and it does so by performing two steps of identification, identifying the code set and identifying the key code. Nothing there about translating, nothing there about converting, and the specification is consistent. You know, the specification is always the most important claim construction tool. And if you look at the flowchart for the 642 patent, figure 2, it talks about the generating step. And in the specification at column 4, lines 24 to, at beginning of lines 24, the specification says, next, step 102, key code generator device 12, determines which key code of the code set previously identified in step 100 corresponds to the press key. It's not talking about translating or converting. And if we look in the specification further, the only time the terms generating, the only times the terms converting or translating are used are in column 5. Translating is at column 5, lines 45 to 49, and converting is in column 5, line 54. And that has to do with steps that come after the generating step, after the modulating step, and after the transmitting step. It has nothing to do with the generating step. And the last point I wanted to make on this is another term that's part of the generating step is keystroke indicator signal. The board construed that term to mean as follows. A signal distinct from a key code corresponding to a press key on the remote control with the clarification that the keystroke indicator signal cannot contain the claimed key code. Now, why is that important? Well, if you put that construction into the generating step, here's what you get. Generating a key code within a key code generator device using a signal distinct from the key code that cannot contain the key code. And why is that important? Because the specification discloses that a key code that has been translated or converted into another format from a received key code still contains the received key code. So if we look at appendix page 247, column 4, lines 35 to 37 of the patent, 642 patent, they talk about creating a first key code signal by doing this. The key code generator device modulates the key code onto a carrier signal generating a first key code signal 19. So key code signal 19 contains the key code. Then it goes on. Column 5, lines 45 to 49.
Did you make these arguments below?
Yes. This is all part of the intrinsic record that the board considered.
Did you argue this? The argument you're making now, did you make it before the board?
I don't believe we made this specific claim construction argument, but it's not a different claim construction we're asserting. We're just showing further evidence in the record that the board considered in reaching its claim construction decision.
If you didn't argue it below, you shouldn't argue it now.
Well, what we did argue below is the specification, and the first part of the specification that I just talked about having to do with when the generating step where it says determining the appropriate key code, and the board hit that right on the head. And the only time that converting and translating is used in the patent is in column 5 with respect to steps that are far removed from the generating step. And with that, I will thank you for your time.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. This case is taken under submission.